On Tech News Today, Elon Musk wants to run your home on batteries. We've got more details about Microsoft's HoloLens. We've also got some great news for Android users. Stick around. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, May 1st, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Our co-anchor today is myself. I'm both anchoring and co-anchoring today. And, you know, what are you going to do? And, of course, Christina Warren is off today. She's our normal Friday co-anchor. She's probably got Microsoft Build keynote burnout syndrome. She went to the keynote, and it was 3 hours. 3 hours of in-your-face Microsoft goodness there. So that's a lot for anyone to take. But she is taking the day off today. Well, let's jump into our top story. Tesla Motors CEO Elon Musk last night, as expected, announced two new battery products at the company's Southern California design studio. Josh Jezza is a reports editor for The Verge and joins us now. How you doing, Josh?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. So before we get into the actual products, can you tell us why Musk thinks homes and businesses actually need batteries? How does he envision them being used?
Right. So the important context there is really the rise of renewable energy, especially solar over the last couple of years. As people have installed solar panels on their homes, a lot of them through the company SolarCity, on which Elon is on the board, it's created a lot of energy that is distributed and doesn't necessarily match demand. So the sun isn't always shining when you need power. And these spikes and imbalances between supply and demand can be hard to manage. So states with lots of renewables, like California and New York, have created mandates for utilities to add storage. That's sort of the short-term market. Long-term, it looks like we're moving toward a more distributed, decentralized grid in which networks of solar panels and batteries could store and feed energy into the grid as needed. And that's really the play that Musk, both with Tesla and SolarCity, has been making for a couple of years.
Interesting. Now, we just got our second interview for this segment, who is Wayne Cunningham. Wayne Cunningham writes about car technology for CNET and joins us now. Welcome to the show, Wayne.
Thanks, Mike.
And thanks for being here. Now, of course, you obviously, as a car tech guy, heavily cover Tesla as a car company. And so, this is really interesting that they're sort of trying to make this a consumer-y play. One of them is, of course, for the home, one for businesses. Can you talk about the Powerwall for homes? What is that all about? How much does it cost? Like, what is this product exactly?
Yeah, they've got two different versions of it. One is a 7 kilowatt hour battery pack. One is a 10 kilowatt hour battery pack, and the cost to installers, they said, is $3,000 for the smaller one, $3,500 for the larger one. But the crux is, for a home user, for somebody who wants to get this in their home, they're going to have to go to a certified installer, and that the price will go up based on the installation fees. So, no really telling what the cost is going to be to the installer. Musk mentioned during the press conference last night that the real benefit of these is to somebody with solar panels. It's not, it does provide a benefit for somebody just on the grid, but the real benefit is for solar panels. And it seems, there are devices like this out there already. It seems some of the play is that these devices are very integrated and I don't know the comparative cost between other ones, but they said that this one comes in at a really low price point.
And of course, the industrial one is a little bit more expensive, although I'm not sure we know the exact price. Can you talk about the power? What is the other one called? It's the one for industries.
That's the power pack. Right. And actually, they do have a price on that. Musk quoted that as he quoted $250 per kilowatt hour. And so that works out to $25,000 for each one because they come in 100 kilowatt hour modules. And that price is also supposed to be really good, according to Tesla. Again, I don't really have verification against other companies, other offerings, how that stacks up. I imagine Tesla's pretty good at the battery technology, so that could be a really good price for this technology. So they're working with other companies to install these. Apparently, they already have some clients online with these devices.
Interesting. Now, Josh, you know, I think most of us are really interested in the home version simply because, you know, I think a lot of us think about how great it would be to be off the grid and sort of like out there. But, you know, you can imagine a typical scenario where somebody has solar panels that provide, you know, most of their electricity, but they still need to be on the grid and they want to manage it and save money and all the rest. Does this include like management, like, you know, automated management of some kind? What's the sort of on the software or the management end of this besides just the big battery that you mount on the wall?
Right. We don't know too much about that right now, but you can get a lot, some hints by looking at SolarCity. Musk mentioned that the Tesla batteries will be internet connected and have and be managed by Tesla software. My guess is that will look something like the demand logic software that SolarCity began installing with its solar and Tesla battery systems a couple years ago, which will, they say, flow energy, sort energy back into the grid or draw on it when prices are high. The marketplaces that and auction systems that would manage something like that are still taking shape, and it's something that energy companies, utilities, and regulators are actively hashing out right now. But yes, eventually the hope would be that solar panels plus batteries would operate as some sort of smart grid managing flows themselves.
He referred to something called smart microgrids, Josh. Was that what you're talking about? What is the smart microgrid concept?
Right. That would be a network of solar panels and batteries that would store energy and then flow it out onto the grid automatically. So instead of having a power plant that distributes energy centrally, you would have a network. One of the things Musk mentioned, which was interesting, was that these batteries could be useful on developing grids, places without a lot of infrastructure, energy infrastructure right now. Part of that's because the mechanisms that would manage smart grids haven't quite been hashed out yet, though SolarCity does have some pilot projects going. But you can imagine a place that doesn't have strong utility system, a power plant, power lines could find value in something like a bunch of batteries and solar panels that could all be wired together.
Now, Wayne, apparently this was a I didn't actually watch the whole thing. I only watched part of it. But everybody was saying that this was an amazing keynote and that Elon Musk was at the top of his game. He spewed out a lot of really memorable lines, including referring to the sun as a, quote, handy fusion reactor in the sky, unquote. And he also pointed out that we tried to, you know, paint Tesla as not so much a car company, but as a battery company. And my understanding is that the cost of a Tesla is about one quarter of it is the battery technology. Does this new, let's assume that this new business, these home and industrial battery products are going to be super successful in the market and they're going to be churning out lots of them. Does this bring economies to scale to their car operation? Will this make Teslas cheaper?
Well, I wouldn't say so. No, not at all, actually. What's going to make Teslas cheaper is them opening the Gigafactory, their new battery manufacturing facility in Nevada. They're set to open that next year. And they mentioned during this conference that the power walls, they'll start manufacturing those late this year out of their Fremont facility. But then those will go into phase two, full production, once they open the Gigafactory. So that's where they're going to be getting their you know, sourcing their batteries from. And that's really where it all happens. And that's going to ramp up development. Yeah, the cars don't really play into the equation, except, you know, it makes for a nice cohesive ecosystem, Tesla ecosystem, with your power systems at home. if you have the car and the Powerwall batteries and solar panels, then you get sort of more of a cohesive power ecosystem. But yeah, I don't think it really promotes the cars at all necessarily. And actually, I was almost surprised that they only were doing 10 kilowatt hour maximum battery packs for the Powerwall, because the top of the line Model S has an 85 kilowatt hour pack. So I was thinking they could have, I was thinking they would have gotten a much bigger battery pack for the Powerwall, but they actually limited it. And I've done some research into what the average U.S. home uses in electricity, and that's rated at 30 kilowatt hours per day, just on average. And so this battery won't necessarily supply all your electricity needs for a day, depending on where you live, of course.
Interesting. Now, of course, we learned from the new Elon Musk book by Ashley Vance that Google almost bought, supposedly, Tesla 2 years ago. And there's always been commentators like myself and others who have said that Apple should buy or should have bought Tesla. What do you think about the idea that one of these big Silicon Valley giants would buy Tesla and run it as one of their divisions? Should they have done that, or is Tesla better off as an independent company?
I think Tesla is better off as independent. The fact that Elon has hired good automotive people to run that company, to do the engineering that needs to be done, and the fact that he has such a strong vision about it. You know, if it gets subsumed under a Google, well, Google's been pretty good about it. If they buy something, they tend to, you know, let smart people do their job. And that might work in its favor. But I think Tesla standing alone serves you know, Elon's vision a little bit better than if it was under another company. And in Apple in particular, I would have to disagree with you there. I don't think it would be a good buy for Apple, because I don't think they would put the right mix of stuff in there. If they force iOS into the dashboard, for example, that would turn off half the potential buyers for the Model S.
Interesting. Now, Josh, one last question. You know, the big news here isn't the products, really. It's the big vision, and everybody takes these sort of big vision plays by Elon Musk very seriously, because, you know, he launched Tesla. You know, he created this car company. He launched his rocket. You know, he's got his own space program. I mean, this is a guy who actually delivers on the stuff that he says that he's going to deliver on. Do you think that this is feasible, this vision of the future of electrical management that he's laying out here, that everything's going to be, you know, have all these batteries involved? Is this going to go mainstream at some point?
I think so, yeah. It's unclear exactly how it will work, but the movement definitely seems to be toward more distribution. As solar panels have gotten so much cheaper, you have to do something with this power. And driving down the price of batteries through economies of scale and the Gigafactory is a good move for Tesla, both by lowering the price of their cars, lowering price of these batteries, and increasing demand for electricity by furthering the adoption of electric vehicles. One striking projection that I read, I think it was from GTM, is that the energy storage market in the States grew 40% last year and is expected to grow by 250% this year. That's almost all front of meter for, things like the larger battery being sold to companies and utilities. When the residential market for storage kicks in, it would potentially be huge. So I do think that it's ambitious, but it's feasible, and already sort of the direction things are headed.
Very interesting. Well, Wayne Cunningham writes for CNET.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Way4NE. That's Wayne with a 4 instead of an A. Thank you so much for joining us today, Wayne.
Thank you.
And Josh Jezza is at TheVerge.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh, and his last name is spelled DZIEZA. Thank you for joining us today, Josh.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we've got some more news for you in just a minute, but first, let's talk about Braintree. If you're a developer and you want to take payments, this is the way to do it. If you have really researched the whole topic, then you already know that Braintree is the number one solution for having payments in your mobile app or on your website. Braintree is a full-stack payments platform, and it just makes it super easy for your customers to use your site to buy stuff. It's used by companies like Uber, Hotel Tonight, Airbnb, Living Social, and Munchery. It enables you to use Apple Pay. You got to use Apple Pay these days. PayPal, most credit cards and debit cards. You know, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discover, JCB, even Diners Club is supported. And they've got sophisticated fraud protection for merchants of every size at no additional cost and continuous support. Braintree can scale with your business. If you're a small business, you intend on becoming a medium-sized business and someday a big business, you got to stick with Braintree right now because they will scale with your company. Braintree gives you a full-stack payment solution and support for all payments types, PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, credit cards, and more, and all with a single integration across all platforms. Superior fraud protection, superior customer service, and fast payouts. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee free, go to braintreepayments.com/TNT. Microsoft has been showing demos of its HoloLens augmented reality system since January, but now they're revealing to a few journalists not only apps, but the app creation process. Pete Paschal is a tech editor at Mashable and also a holographic developer, apparently. Pete, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Yes, I am a graduate of the Holographic Academy.
Congratulations. Did they give you a sort of a virtual, like, 3D floating in space kind of a, like, you know, plaque or something?
Like, they should, you know, and it should just follow me around. And I could just put on the HoloLens and then it's right there. You could conceivably do that. No, we got like a sweatshirt or something. So
there's that. At least you'll be less cold. Now, what's it like to create content for the HoloLens?
You know, it was surprisingly easy. And though, keep in mind, basically what I went through was what they call sort of their Holographic Academy, but it was an abbreviated version. So developers, to get the full experience, get like a 4-hour session, and they'll take you through putting holographic objects and manipulating them and writing scripts for them. We basically did that in 90 minutes. So we did a lot of the placement and a lot of the creation of this stuff, but not the actual writing of the code or the scripts. All that was ready-made, but it was still a pretty good sense of what it takes to build one of these apps. And we used Unity, a 3D sort of engine that's often used for games, and to sort of move objects around and put them in various places. And it's all very straightforward. Once you get down to it, it's like, you know, okay, here's an element. I want it to appear 2 meters in front of me when I turn it on and a meter down. And, you know, you've seen all these 3D imaging programs. It's right there. You can move it and figure out where it's going to be. Then you just throw it up into the unit in Microsoft Visual Studio and boom. You put it on and there it is. It's right in front of you. Now, this was my very first experience with the HoloLens. So I had a very, high hopes for it. I sort of bought into the hype, and I've also had the demo for Oculus Rift. So I was ready for a big heads up display and objects all around you. And honestly, if you look at Microsoft literature around it, they encourage this kind of view that you're going to see all stuff all around you. It's not quite that. The instant you put on the HoloLens, reality kind of sets in. And you suddenly realize, oh, the holograms are only kind of visible through a window within your field of view, which is still fairly big, but it's not doesn't include the periphery. So if you move your head, the holograms, which are, you know, again, fixed in space, unless you sort of program them not to be, don't move with you. If they move out of that window, they disappear. So you're kind of immediately confronted with the reality of the HoloLens, which isn't quite living up to the promise. But once you sort of get used to that and you accept what this thing is, the curve kind of goes back up. You realize the potential of it. And then the academy that they do is very well thought out, because first you have objects. Then you're like, okay, well, then how do we interact with them? And then they add a layer of interaction so you can move them. And then you add real physics. So when you move them, say a ball, it'll actually drop as if it's being affected by gravity. And then the next layer is sounds. And then the next layer is even more kind of whiz-bang stuff. And as they ramp this up, you realize, oh, wow, you know, maybe it's not Oculus and this crazy immersive environment. But you know what? There is some really cool stuff here. And it's actually fairly easy to create.
That's interesting. And you wrote that existing Windows 10 code can be modified to run on HoloLens. I don't really understand that. Can you walk me through that? What kind of code and how does that work?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't really understand it that much either. What I do understand is that the tools and the code base are the same.
Huh.
So you can take an app and add some elements to it, and it will become a HoloLens version of that app. How that's going to be realized, I'm not sure. I expect in the most basic version, you're going to see, if you say ported like Evernote to the HoloLens and not do a lot of stuff, you'll see it essentially on a screen in front of you in the HoloLens. And you can add some basic functionality that you would normally, you would transfer your touch commands, and those would become gesture commands with, you know, you do this to select things in HoloLens rather than touching them, because obviously there's nothing to touch. So that basic level of transfer, I think, is the first kind of apps we'll see in the HoloLens. So you're going to have like a screen in front of you that follows you around or sort of remains fixed in space. That's interesting, but not that interesting. So the potential of HoloLens will really get unlocked when developers start doing cooler stuff with it, like thinking in 3D. So, you know, going back to the Evernote example, what if you could have not just notes on a flat screen in front of you, but arranged in three dimensions. So you have some stuff over here and some stuff behind you, and maybe they look like actual notes. I don't know if this might inspire more of a return to skeuomorphism. I could almost see because suddenly everything does actually kind of become an object. But really, it's up to developers to do this. But one thing I did sort of sense, whereas with Oculus, I think most people feel the potential out of the gate for that platform is games. If you see the Oculus demo, by far the most impressive part of it is where you're kind of immersed on this game reel. With HoloLens, I don't think that is the intent. Even though there is certainly lots of potential for games, and you know, when you're in it, you're like, wow, Minecraft would be mind-blowing in the HoloLens. There's much more sort of interactivity with objects and just kind of like doing stuff. And this is obviously all part of Microsoft's new philosophy of reinventing productivity. So you definitely get the sense that sort of 3D modeling, anyone with prototyping, you know, they showed obviously the medical demo at the keynote where a body sort of, you know, suddenly became a body in front of a skeleton in front of a muscular map. And so, you know, these kinds of educational and productivity situations, I think, were really what Microsoft has in mind.
I can't wait for the holographic version of Clippy. You know, I see you're trying to play Minecraft. Now, there's an Easter egg in the HoloLens. Can you tell us about the Easter egg?
Well, yeah, this was sort of part of the demo. It was very, it was actually very cool because they had a pre-made, we had some objects and they would, you know, a couple of balls would fall when we would activate them. And they had pre-made this scenario where if you tap one of them and it falls, and if you activate this thing, it explodes. And then there was this entire, this hole would appear in space. And you would see this entire environment through the hole with a complete with, and it was a sort of origami theme. So there was like a flying paper pterodactyl and just kind of like, you know, paper textured trees and paper textured valleys and paper textured rivers. And it was like, you know, it was kind of like you're manipulating all this stuff. And then they kind of, the grand finale sort of shows you the huge potential of it. Again, you're seeing this all through a window, right? So you're not immersed in the environment in the same way you would be in Oculus. But it did sort of unlock this. Oh, you know, you can still kind of do stuff like that, but just in a kind of, you know, a bit of an arm's length way. So it was pretty cool.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, if you'd like Pete Paschal to augment your reality by reading his stuff, you can find him at Mashable.com. You can also find him on Twitter at Pete Paschal. Thanks for joining us today, Pete.
My pleasure.
A Facebook bug yesterday made posts disappear for some users and prevented some new posts from being accepted. Facebook said in a statement that their system for blocking bad links went haywire and flagged good links as bad ones. The issue has been fixed, according to Facebook. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos' space company Blue Origin successfully launched its best spacecraft in a test flight. The rocket is called New Shepard, and it successfully lifted up off from a West Texas launch pad and soared over 300,000 feet in the air. The rocket will eventually be able to land vertically, but not this time. A glitch in the hydraulic system prevented the propulsion module from being recovered, and we can only assume, that someday these rockets are going to provide really, really fast delivery of your books. Well, the California chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union launched a mobile app yesterday designed to enable people to record the police and have those videos quickly uploaded to secure ACLU services in case police confiscate or destroy the phones. The app also alerts other app users in the area so they can rush to the scene and do their own recordings. This is a really interesting and timely project because, of course, Walter Scott and Freddie Gray were both killed recently, allegedly, by police officers. And we're talking about them, and they're famous only because people were, you know, bystanders, recorded what happened to a certain extent. And so this is very much in the news. Of course, President Obama approved a whole bunch of money, and the first $20 million has been paid out for police cameras. And so a lot of people believe that the solution to the problem of police brutality, or even to protect police officers when they are accused of police brutality, is to have everybody filming it. And I think that is a reasonable idea. It's not going to be a perfect solution. It's not going to be the total solution, but it is probably going to be better than only the cases in which the rare cases where people are filmed, you get some sort of resolution or justice or attention. Well, in product update news, Microsoft has been promoting the idea that the company's phones would run Windows 10. They've also been saying that Windows 10 ships this summer. But yesterday, the company's operating systems chief, Joe Belfiore, said that only the PC version of Windows 10 would launch this summer, and that other Windows 10 products, including phones, Service Hub, Xbox, and HoloLens, would come later. Later is a very vague and nebulous word, unfortunately. Microsoft also announced this week that some features of Windows 10 would not be available at launch. So this is kind of, I think a lot of people were expecting all Windows 10 versions to ship this summer and, you know, feature complete. Those things are not going to happen. Well, Google announced yesterday a new feature for voice search. Voice search commands can now open some apps and execute those commands in the apps. For example, you can say, "Okay, Google, give me showtimes for Age of Ultron on Flixster," or "Listen to NPR," and these actions will simply take place. Well, good news for Android users who are, narcissistic and self-centered. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, folks. The live streaming service Meerkat now has a public Android version. It's labeled beta, but the feature set is comparable to the iOS version. You know, it's kind of fascinating that there's this big phenomenon of live streaming apps, mostly driven, for people over the age of 20, by Meerkat and Periscope, and yet both of those products have only been on iOS. So I'm really curious to see what happens now that they're on Android. And, of course, this whole phenomenon really started for very young people more than a year ago with YouNow, which is very, very popular and features mostly videos of teenagers basically doing nothing. Well, in product obituary news, the online streaming website Grooveshark has been shut down. Pwned, really. The company was sued by several record companies, including a $15 billion suit from Universal Music Group. According to a sad note on their website, they have to delete all copyrighted material, forfeit their online and mobile platforms, and hand over all their patents and intellectual property. They also apologized, saying, "Despite our best of intentions, we made very serious mistakes. We failed to secure licenses from rights holders for the vast amount of music on the service. That was wrong. We apologize without reservation." Wow. Well, Microsoft is buying the assets of an Israeli touchscreen company that makes the stylus for the Surface Pro 3. The company is called Entrig, and the price is around $30 million. Some people estimated, when this was just a rumor, that it might be $10 million. Others estimated $200 million, but no, it's about $30 million. And this, I believe, is the third Israeli startup that Microsoft has purchased in recent months. Israel is just really hot right now. Great place to get great technology from startups. And so everybody's doing it, including Microsoft. We've got some big numbers for you. 81.2. That's how many dollars Apple spends on parts to build the 38-millimeter Apple Watch Sport. That's the cheapest version. Okay, another number for you. This is a small number. 2.5. That's how many dollars it costs Apple to pay for the manufacturing of the same watch. You know, people talk a lot about how, you know, China's stealing our jobs and all this kind of stuff because they do all this manufacturing. But, you know, the Apple Watch Sport starts at $349, and the people who make it are getting $2.50 for it. So I think, you know, it's designed in California, and that's where the money's going. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Art Lewandowski, who posted this picture on Twitter. And like, it seems, all of the TNT fans out there, he's got way too many monitors. But we are right there front and center for a change, right in front of the keyboard. Very, very cool. Show us how you watch TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, wherever. Just use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on TuneIn Radio. That's a great place to subscribe. You can choose any other way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. If you'd like to help us grow our audience, here's how you can do it. Just post a link to twit.tv/TNT on the social media site of your choice. Tag three friends along with your recommendation to subscribe, and that'll help us grow a lot faster. You can also watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv or on the app or browser plugin of your choice. You can find those choices at twit.tv/apps. If you're ever in the San Francisco Bay Area, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience. Just make sure you send email to tickets@twit.tv in advance. And come hang out with us in our Google Plus community. Just search Google Plus for Tech News Today and you'll find the community. You can also follow me on Google Plus. Just go to Google Plus and find me at Plus Mike Elgin. Also, don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. And that is the Tech News Today. This show was produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Brian Burnett. My name is Mike Elgin. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.